Today's shiur is for Zchus for Refuah Shleima for Shalom ben Bracha. Today's shiur is Masechet Ksubos Daf Tzadik Hei. We will begin on Daf Tzadik Hei Amud Aleph at the Mishnah at the top of the Amud. Says the Mishnah Mishay Yishtay Noshim, if somebody's married to two women, the first Ksuba, the one woman got married before the other one, so there are different dates. There's one date that's earlier and there's one date that's later. And this person, this husband, only had one field which was mortgaged to both ksubas. And the value of that field was only equal to the value of one of the ksubas. Omacha sadeu, and now he sold his feet. The kasva rishona lekeach, but the first wife wrote to the buyer of the field, dinu dvarim ein li'imach. I have, as we just said, she had a right to collect that field because that field was mortgaged to the ksuba. But she wrote to him that she forgives that right. Dinu dvarim ein li'imach. So the first wife wrote that declaration to the owner of the field. The second one never wrote such a declaration. So the halach is, Hashni Mitzaya Melekeach. The second wife has a right to collect that field because the second wife wrote that she never gave up her rights. But now that the second wife takes that field in payment for her ksuba, the first wife gave up her rights towards the lokeach. The first wife never gave up her rights towards the second wife. So once the second wife collects the field, the first wife says, well, my ksuba is written before your ksuba. So now we're rishona min hashniya. Now the first wife goes and collects that field from the second wife, v'lekeach, and she now has it. But since this first wife had written to the buyer that she's giving up any claims that she may have towards him, so now he comes back to lekeach min rishona. Now he comes back to her. So what happens is that they're going in a circle. The Chaim de Shloima asks, why does the lekeach have a right to go back to the first wife? He asks that what the first wife gave up was that she won't collect directly from him, the buyer, the field that he bought. But she did not collect it from him. She collected it from the second wife. And his relationship from the field to the field has apparently expired. And therefore the question is, why in this situation should the field not remain, with the first wife? The Ritva asked this question, and Ritva says that when the second wife goes to collect the field from the buyer, this first wife doesn't really allow her to do so, because she says to the second wife, you can't collect this field, I come before you. And therefore she is essentially, says the Ritva, the first wife is essentially collecting the field directly from the buyer, which to whom she wrote, I won't collect from you. And that's why this around and around that we just described begins. The Chayza Chalila, and this goes around and around. And there's four here, 2 points out. It's not that it actually goes around and around. Besdin is not going to make itself into a joke to allow this to continue happening. Besdin will say, if this is what's eventually going to happen, we won't let this happen unless Achiyasu Pshar B'Neim, until they work something out. That means two of these three parties have to work things out between each other. Either the buyer and the second wife will have to agree that the second wife will not collect the ksuba from him, and the first wife will lose out. That's one pshat. Another pshat that I saw is that pshara means that everybody should not get everything. Everybody should be satisfied to accept a partial payment. And since everybody will accept a partial payment, and they will agree not to have any claims against each other. concludes the Mishnah v'kein bal choy v'kein isha bal choy, that the same situation will happen in the case of a bal choy and isha bal choy, which the Gemara will explain. Ask the Gemara the first question. The basic rule of our Mishnah was that the first wife wrote to the buyer, din udvarm ainli. Ask the Gemara, and if she wrote that, v'chi chosv loy, if she wrote such a release to the buyer, my hava, why would that be acceptable? V'tanya, haim l'chaveroi, if somebody says to his partner, din udvarm ainli asodazu, I don't have any claims on this field, ainli esik, but I have no business with it, v'yodim misaleks menu, loyama klum, because these words don't have really any meaning. In other words, you could give something as a gift, but you can't just say that din udvarm ainli. So many achronim ask the question that, yes, in the case of partners, the only way it will, these type of wording would not be halachically acceptable. But why shouldn't it work with mechila? Mechila means that she's forgiving her obligation. So the Chazon Ish actually says that the question of the Gemara is that from this braisa, it's quite clear that Chazal looked at the words din udvarim ainli esich bach, all these words that we just learned in the Gemara as a very declaration. And what the Gemara is really asking, says the Chazon Ish, is that when the forgiveness or the declaration was expressed in these weak words, the halacha doesn't really give that type of wording any credibility. But indeed, says the Chazon Ish, if the Mishnah would have said that she expressed herself in a wording of mechila, that she's giving up her rights, then the halacha would be that the Gemara wouldn't have asked any question. I saw Rabbi Kiva Eger answers a different question. He says that the Gemara's question is that even if she would have used the word mechila, it should not be strong enough of a wording. And the reason he explains why it wouldn't be considered enough of a wording, because maybe if she said mechila towards the person who bought the property, so that would be strong enough. But she's not. But the person who bought the property is not the only individual who's part of this equation. As we learned in the Mishnah, we're going to learn in the Gemara, part of the equation is actually the other wife. And that's why writing to him, or even saying that she's giving up her rights to the lokeach, is not adequate because she also has the second wife. Another way that I saw that Avni Meluim addresses this question, it goes back to a concept that we've learned earlier. And that is when somebody has an obligation, there are two elements to the obligation. One element to the obligation is the shibud mammon, is the financial obligation. And the other element of the obligation is the shibud haguf, the personal obligation. And that these words may be adequate to satisfy the financial obligation, but they're not adequate to satisfy the financial obligation. If they're not adequate to satisfy the personal obligation, and that's why the Gemara's question is, how come this would even be considered something that we should be concerned about? Answers the Gemara, we're referring here where a kinyan was made. When she forgave the rights to the buyer of the field, she didn't just use this weak language. She used a much stronger wording. She did a kinyan. And when a kinyan is done, that makes it much stronger. And again, the way to understand the Gemara is the way we explained, according to Rashi, that the Gemara's question was that the wording is an inadequate wording, and the Gemara's teretz is that it is adequate when it's accompanied by a kinyan. Ask the Gemara, v'kikonim yodim ayhava, why, if it's accompanied by a kinyan, will that be good enough? Tema, why can't the wife, this first wife, say, nachas ruach asis labali, when I made this kinyan and I made this declaration to the buyer that I'm not going to have any claim to him, I didn't really mean it. I only did it because that's what was going to be to satisfy my husband's request that he wanted to sell this property to this buyer. He knew the buyer wouldn't buy it if there's a lien on it, and he made me, and I therefore said these words. Miloy Tanan, the Mishnah Masechet Gittin teaches us, Lokachman Ish, if a buyer bought from a husband a property which is designated for a ksuba payment, the chazva lokachman isha, and then he got from the wife a declaration that she's agreeable, mechabotel, the agreement that the wife made is not considered halachically something that we can be concerned with. Alma, because she could say, even though I said it, Yechayli Shitayma, she says, the only reason I said it was Nachas Ruach, Asis Labali, I wanted to satisfy my husband's request. And Rashi Masechet Gittin says that the reason the woman can make this claim is the husband could say that, you know why you didn't agree to my request? Because obviously you're considering that we're getting divorced, and that's why you're going to need to get a ksuba. Or you're considering that I'm going to die, and therefore you're worried about your ksuba payment. To show that that's what she's not thinking, she had no choice but to agree to give up her rights. And that's why Rashi and the Rishonim over there continue to explain that why wasn't she Maisa Medar? The Gemara often speaks about a woman who's put into this type of a predicament can be Maisa Medar. What she could say is that I didn't really mean to do what I did. The only reason I did it, she could declare that she did it under duress, she did it with another reason. So why over here wasn't she Maisa Medar? And the Rishonim explain, because she's concerned that if her husband finds out that she's Maisa Medar, the husband's going to say, oh, you really want to see our marriage end. And that's why you're Maisa Medar. And that's why she doesn't make it public. Says ask the Truma Sadashin a different question. We're saying she didn't say anything as she gave up her right. But we're assuming and we're allowing her now to make a claim that the only reason she did it was because Nachas Ruach Asis Labali. I wanted to satisfy my husband. But as the Trum Sadeshin, don't we have a right, don't we have a rule throughout Shas that Dvarim Shebelev Ein Dvarim? If you don't express what you mean, it's not considered halachically something that we have to be considered about. So why over here are we allowing her to come along later and say that I only signed it because Nachas Ruach Asisi Labali? So the Trumas Hadashin answers a very important point. He says, even though throughout Shas the halacha is that Dvarim Shebelev Ein Dvarim, and we don't take in consideration something that wasn't verbalized, but when there's an umdana, the muchach, when it's obvious that that was what she was doing, so there we're not concerned about Dvarim Shebelev Ein Dvarim. Then the Rishonim ask another question. He says, they ask, that there's a very famous Gemara in Masechet Baba Basra, Daf Mem Ches Amud Beis, where the Gemara says, Teluya v'zovin zvina zvina, that if somebody was forced into selling something, but he sold it in a halachically proper manner, the halach is that the sale, a pi halach, is considered a valid sale. So therefore they ask, yes, she could say, Nachas Ruach Asis Labali. But at the end of the day, the only reason she did this was because she had to do what made her husband happy. But she did agree. So once she agreed, then the halacha is it should be a valid sale. So the Rashbam, to answer this question, says, and it's very similar to the vort that we just saw from the Trumas Hadeshin, when it's so obvious that the sale was not done properly, that there really wasn't any interest to do the sale, then the halacha is that we don't recognize the deal. And he explains that the whole purpose of any deal, the reason any deal is halachically acceptable is because a kinyan represents a gemiristas. A kinyan represents that he was serious about making this transaction. He was certain that they weren't interested in making this transaction, and therefore it's not considered a valid transaction. The Ramban gives a different teretz. The Ramban says that it's only considered, even though the Gemara, as we just quoted in Masechta Bava Basra, says Taluya v'zovin zvina zvina, that even if you were forced to sell something, it's considered a sale. That's when you got something in exchange. Here, he didn't get anything in exchange. She didn't get anything for in exchange. When somebody sells something and accepts the money that is being paid, even though they weren't happy about the sale, they got the money. And since they got the money, that's why she has to be satisfied. They have to be satisfied. Here, this wife is not getting anything in return. And since they're not getting anything in return, since she's not getting anything in return, when we know she did it only because of Nachas Ruach Asis Labali, it's not considered something that we have to... She could say that I really didn't mean to do so. So the question goes back to our Mishnah. Why, even if she said it and she did a kinyan, can't she say that she really didn't mean it and she only did it because Nachas Ruach Asis Labali? Answers the Gemara, Amrav Zeira, Amrav Chizda Loikasha. Ha, who our Mishnah is following the opinion of Rameya, that we're going to say that we're going to see Rameya's opinion is that we don't subscribe to the concept of Nachas Ruach Asis Labali. The Mishnah Masechta Gittin, where we are learning this concept of Nachas Ruach Asis Labali, represents the opinion of Yehuda. So I saw a beautiful pshat from the Sefer Paradis Yosef. He says that the Torah says, Rashi quotes in the Chumash, V'sagil b'nei Yisrael, Elu ha'noshim. And the question is, why were the women approached before the men were approached? So the Paradis Yosef explains that if the men would have accepted the Torah first, then the women could have said that the only reason we accepted the Torah was because Nachas Ruach Asis Labali, that we only did what we did because we wanted to satisfy our husbands. But now that the Torah teaches us that the women were approached first, so that you don't have a claim of Nachas Ruach Asis Labali, and that's why the Torah speaks about them being spoken to first. The pasuk says, "V'tan Rachav Aleya," that Rachav Aleya said to Yaakov Avinu, "V'tamanu loy hayesh lanu chelk v'nachla v'beis Avinu." And the Medrash says, "Hoyel v'gdima Rachav Aleya," since Rachel preceded in these comments before Leah, "Akein loy zochs likavi imoy b'maris machpela." She didn't have the right to be. She didn't get the schus to be buried together with Yaakov Avinu in the maris machpela. What's pshat? Explains the Chassam Sofer that if a woman claims Nachas Ruach Asis Labali, she has that claim, as we're learning in the Gemara, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda. When doesn't she have that claim? On assets that belong to him, to her. That nobody could force her what to do. Furthermore, says the Chassam Sofer, if somebody has a document and the first wife signs, and then the second wife signs, the second wife could say, the only reason I signed is because I couldn't be different than the first wife. If the first wife signed, I had no sign, choice but to sign. So here we find that Rachel comments to Yaakov Avinu, "Hayesh leinu chelek, do we have any share that in what Lavan left us?" Now these were assets that they had a claim to. They were speaking about assets that they got from Lavan. What were they saying? What was Rachel saying? That I give up any rights to any assets that I may own to you, Yaakov, my husband. And that's how Yaakov became the owner of the Maris Machpelah. Rachel, who made this comment, could not say that Nachas Ruach Asis Labali, I'm doing it to satisfy my husband. She wasn't forced into doing it. So when she made this comment, she gave up her share of Maris Machpelah. Leah only was agreeing to Rachel. Since Leah was only agreeing to Rachel, Leah could say Nachas Ruach Asis Labali. And that's why Leah is not considered as if she gave up a share in the Maris Machpelah. And she was Zoicha to be buried in the Maris Machpelah, which Rachel was not Zoicha to. There's a very interesting question that I saw in the Chashuki Chemed. We know that the halacha is that the reality is, in most in Israel, there's a word for it, that when you sell an apartment, when you sell a real estate, you have to sign over the deed. In Eretz Yisrael, it's called a taboo. So the question is, our Gemara just taught us the concept of Nachas Ruach L'Isis L'Bali. The halacha, so a husband sold an apartment. The apartment is on both the husband and wife's name. And the husband sold the apartment. But when you sign over the deed, the halacha is that the rule is that in order for the sale to go through, both owners have to sign it. So the question is, if she signs that deal, is that considered Nachas Ruach Asis L'Bali? Because he discusses that here, she didn't just say it, but she actually signed it over. So he suggests that even though we're learning in our Gemara that a woman could claim Nachas Ruach Asis L'Bali, that can't be claimed when she actually signed the deed over. There's only a limit to how far you could say Nachas Ruach Asis L'Bali. We're going to now, so the Gemara had just taught us that this question of Nachas Ruach Asis L'Bali is a machlokes of Ramei who does not subscribe to it, and Rabbi Yehuda who does. We're going to learn a rule that Ein Nefros Nefraim and Nechos Meshibodim and Mokim Shesh B'nai Chayrim, that if somebody comes to collect a debt from somebody else, we don't go to property that was sold in a place where the loiva still has property, even though there's a burius, which means that under normal circumstances, as we often discuss, there are three grades of property. Idyus is the best, Banus is the average, and Zaburius is the worst. Normally, a chayv, normally a debt, is collected from Banus. But if there are two options, you could either go to the loiva himself, but if you go to the loiva himself, the loiva doesn't have any Banus. He only has a burius. Or you could go to the Nechasim Shabadim. The loch is the malva has to go after the loiva, even though it'll mean that he'll get ziburius. Now, the halacha is that if the loiva sold his property to a number of people, the halacha is that the last person who bought property from the loiva is the person to whom the malva goes first. And therefore, since he's the person that the malva goes to first, he, even though he is the one that bought Zaburius, that's what the malva is going to have to take. The Tanya, as the Brisa teaches us, if somebody owned two properties and he sold both of those properties to two individuals, the Kasav Larishan, but he sold the property to the first person, but the wife did not agree to not agree. The wife did not give up her rights from where she could collect the ksuba. And then Lashani, but then he sold the property to the second person, the Chosmalai. And that individual, the wife signed that she's giving up her rights. The halacha is that this woman, if the ksubasa, has nowhere to collect her ksuba from, divrei meya, because she can't go to the first buyer because he bought it when there's still property left by the husband. And as we just said, if there's property still left by the husband, the wife, whoever's coming to collect, can't go to the first buyer, has to go to the second buyer. Because the first buyer could always say to somebody who's coming to collect, "Hinachti l'cha makoim ligusimenu, I left you property where to collect your debt from." As the halacha is, that ain't goyim nechasim shabadim, but makom sheyesh b'nei chayrim. From the second buyer, she can't collect because she agreed that she won't collect from him. Yehuda says that she can't collect from the second buyer. Because Yechayli Shetaymer, as we're learning in our shir, she could claim Nachas Ruach Asis L'Bali. The only reason I signed that I'm not interested in this field is I just wanted to satisfy my husband. Atem Malachem Alai. You people have no claim against me. So it's quite obvious that the machlokes is, then do we say Nachas Ruach Asis L'Bali or not? So Rashi explains that The Matan D'Amar Rebbeinu says that if she wants to claim Nachas Ruach Hasis Labali, so why didn't she sign by the first sale? If she's so anxious to make her husband happy, she should have signed by the first sale. The fact that she didn't sign by the first sale is an indication that she's not a person that's so interested in Nachas Ruach Hasis Labali. So that's why Rabbi Meir says we can't make the claim. Rabbi Yehuda says we can. Ask the Gemara, Rabbi Sosman Lak Rameya. In our Mishnah, Rameya is following the opinion of Rameya. The Sosman Hassel, but ask the Gemara. In the Mishnah in Masechta Gittin, he teaches us like Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, the Gemara's question is, the way we interpreted our Mishnah is that the woman can't say Nachas Ruach Hasis Labali. The Mishnah and Gittin were explaining that she can't say Nachas Ruach Hasis Labali. Now, both of these Mishnayos are Stam Mishnayos. They're Mishnayos without any names attached. And the way we understand a Stam Mishnah is that when Rabbi HaKadosh, as the author of the Mishnayos, wrote a Stam Mishnah, what he meant to say is by not attaching a name to it, what he really meant to say is that this is the halacha, and it's not just the opinion of one Tana. So now we have a question. How do we have a Stam Mishnah in Masechta Ksubis like Rameyer, and a Stam Mishnah in Masechta Gittin like Rabbi Yehuda? Answers the Gemara, Amar Papa. Our Mishnah speaking about a Grusha. Yes, there's a concept of Nachas Ruach Hasis Labali. But when do we say Nachas Ruach Hasis Labali? By a couple who's married. Here, the couple is divorced. There, she can't say Nachas Ruach Hasis Labali. The Divrei Hakol, even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that we don't say Nachas Ruach Hasis Labali. Rav Ashi, again, is trying to answer the steer of the Mishnayos. Our Mishnah seems to say that we don't say Nachas Ruach Hasis Labali. The Mishnah Masechta Gittin says we do. The way we're going to explain it is as follows. Kol Rameya. Both Mishnayos represent the opinion of Rameya. That kind of come Rameya Hosom. The Mishnah there that says that we can't, the Rameya doesn't agree to Nachas Ruach Hasis Labali, Ela B'Shtei L'Kuchis. When, as we just explained, there were two buyers. Because in such a case, Damila, if you're such a great wife and you're interested in satisfying your husband, Isa the Nachas Ruach Avadat, that you're a woman that's anxious to make your husband satisfied, Lakami Boilech Levit. So why don't you say that already to the first buyer? It's obvious that it was very deliberate what you said and you did, and wasn't just because of Nachas Ruach Hasis Labali. But the Mishnah in Masechta Gittin is Beloikeach Achad, where there's only one buyer. And there, Afila Rameya Moida, where Rameya agrees that you could say Nachas Ruach Hasis Labali. Or Masnisan, our Mishnah, that says that the woman can't say Nachas Ruach Hasis Labali, we're going to have to explain also the Kosel El Acher, that the husband sold properties to two people, and only to the second buyer did the woman agree. So we see that she's not a Nachas Ruach Hasis Labali wife, and she can't make that claim. Ask the Gemara. Says the Gemara. Tanan Hosom, as we just mentioned, ain't from the Chos Mishbadim. We don't go after properties that were sold when the loiva, but Makm Shesh Nechosom Nechayrim, when he still owns property. And even if the property that he owns is zaburious, and as we said a few moments ago, normally a Bachayv collects Beinonis, here, even he'll have to take zaburious. Ibailuhu. So ask the Gemara, Ishtatav Nechayri. What's the halacha when the malva comes to collect his loan, and the loiva has property, but they got ruined, and they can't, and they don't have enough to pay off the debt. Madal atarfa mishabdi. Can we go after the mishabadim? And the Pnei Yeshua has a beautiful way of learning this Gemara. He says, "Who were Chazal anxious to protect? Were Chazal anxious to protect the lekuchas, the people who bought property? And here, the people, when they brought the property, they deliberately bought only as much property that they should leave over with the loiva property that he could pay off his debts. And since that was their goal, that's all that should be considered. The lekuchas did what they should have done. And therefore, now something unexpected happened, that this property that they left over with the loiva got ruined. We're still anxious, says the Pnei Yeshua, the Gemara's question, one side of the Gemara's question is that we're anxious to protect the Lekuchas and we won't have the Malva go after them. Or are we anxious to protect the Malva? And again, the explanation why we'd be so anxious to protect the Malva is because we have a rule often stated in Shas. Shloitimel delos b'fnei lovin. We want to encourage people to lend money. And if somebody lends money and it's going to become difficult, or the halacha will create difficulty for him to be able to collect back his loan, so he won't lend money in the future. And in order to avoid that from happening, Chazal said, well, normally you go after the malva, you go after the loiva, whatever he has, but not in this case. The Mishnah Masechta Gittin teaches us that a creditor cannot confiscate property from the buyer, as like we just learned, as long as the loiva has been a chayrin. So if the buyer ascertained that the seller had sufficient b'nei chayrim in his possession to repay his debts, he doesn't have to worry about anything else. But now we're discussing what happens if those properties that he left with the loiva got ruined. The Ritva says that our Gemara is speaking about a flood, ishtadif. But what's the halacha if the seller's property was stolen by bandits? There he says that certainly the malva could go after the lekuchas. He says that the property in the hands of the bandits is really the same as flooded property, because the loiva can't get the property back from the bandits. The Rashba says that there's Al Gemara specifically speaking about property that was destroyed by a flood. He says that many times when we speak about property that was stolen, the property will come back to its original owner. So you can't compare, says the Rashba, property that was stolen to property that was flooded. Property that was flooded is permanently ruined. Property that was stolen is not permanently gone from the hands of the loiva. The Rosh says that let's say you'll have somebody who Rachmana Tzlan becomes an apikiris and doesn't want to follow the Jewish law, and the courts aren't going to back up the halacha as stated in our Gemara. Says the Rosh that that should be considered like property that was flooded. And property that was flooded, the halacha is you go after the lekuchas. Toshma. We learned the answer from the Bryce that we just discussed. Kosef Lerishin, V'lei Chosmala, a husband sold property to the first buyer, and she did not give up her rights. And then L'Sheni, then he sold his property to a second customer, the Chosmala, and she signed giving up her rights. If the Ksubasa, she lost the Ksuba, Divra Meya, because she can't claim, as we just learned, Nachas Ruach Hasis Labala. This Divra Meya, says the Gemara, Visal Kedatech, Ishtata Bnei Chayri, that in a case where the property that was left over is flooded, is ruined, Tarb Meshabdi, Ned if the Ksubasa Mesheni, she indeed lost her Ksuba from the second husband, from the second buyer, by signing that she's not going to go after him, and we don't say, according to Rameyer, Nachas Ruach Asis Labali, but ask the Gemara, Merei Shemir Tegbi, why can't she go back to the first buyer? And we can't say that the first buyer should say that when I bought the property, I deliberately bought property knowing that there was property left over by your husband from whom and from which you could collect the ksuba, and therefore I was protecting myself. Because the halacha is that she could have collected from, she couldn't, just like if the property got ruined, she could go after the lokeach. Similarly, if there's a reason she can't go back to the second buyer, she should be able to go to the first buyer. Says the Gemara, Amar of Nachma Yitzchak Mai Ibda, when the Gemara actually said that she loses the rights to collect, Ibda Mesheni. But she indeed can go back to the first buyer. So what's the Gemara saying now? What the Gemara is saying is that even if a buyer protects himself, he's not completely protected. He's not completely protected. Amar Rav Nachman, but Yitzchak, my Ivda Mishani, but for the first buyer, she could go back. Amar Rava, Rava says, that's not a correct way of understanding the Braisa. Because Chei Tshuvas Pedova, there are two reasons why that's incorrect. Chada, Dibla Gavra Mashma. The word Ivda means that she lost her rights entirely. Vod, and another reason why that's an incorrect way of interpreting the Braisa, explaining the Braisa, the way Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak just said. Tanya, because the Braisa says, Lovam and Echad. If somebody borrowed money from somebody, Machan Chasu L'Shnayim, and then he sold assets to two people, V'kosov, and he wrote, V'kosov B'chayv L'Lekech Sheni Dinah Dvarim Ein Li Imach, Ein Lo Yalav L'Lekech Rishin Klum. That if the Malva said to the second buyer, I'm not going after you, he can't go after the first buyer. Now, Shiyach Alaymer, because the first buyer could always said, Anachte L'chamakam L'Gvasimenu, I left you place with the first buyer could always say, I deliberately left property from which you could collect, says Rava, but we can't bring a riot to the Sada that was ruined. Hasam either Afshin Nafshin Beidayim. The Malva, by writing to the second buyer that I'm not going to go after you, the woman who wrote to the second buyer, I'm not going to go after you, gave up their rights voluntarily. And therefore, they gave up their rights voluntarily, and they can't go back to the first buyer. But in the case where the property got ruined, it wasn't something that anybody did premeditated. It happened that the buyer left property by the loiva, and then an act of Hashem caused that property should get ruined. Since it wasn't the loiva's fault, and the buyer did buy property on which there is a mortgage, even though he did not expect it to happen, the halacha is that he will be that you go after him. Amle Rav Yemel Rav Ashi, v'maisim b'chol yoyim. Don't we have dayonim that sit in Bezdin every day? That who gavra the mishkan le'padeis l'chaveri? That there was a story where a person lent money to someone else, and the loiva put up his field for a lien on the loan, lesishnin. And the way it was done was, he put up his field as collateral, and the way he structured the collateral was that the malva will eat the payers of those fields for 10 years, and by eating fruit from the payers from the field for 10 years, the loan obligation that the loiva has will have been satisfied. He'll pay up everything that he needs to pay up without actually having to give any money. But what happened here was, the kash l'chamishnin, after 5 years, the field start giving up fruit. V'asal kamay d'rabbanan, and they went to the rabbanan and said, I was supposed to be able to collect for 10 years, but I'm only collecting for 5 years. The field doesn't give any more fruit. The kaslay terfa, and they wrote, the Bezdin wrote, that he could go after the lekuchas. So you see that if something happens unexpected, like the flood, like the field that stops giving fruit, you go back to the lekuchas. Says the Gemara, Hasum nami inuhu dafsin avshayu. The buyer should have considered that this may happen. Kivin dav yodi. They knew that paradisa of the kish, that sometimes fields who are expected to give fruit for 10 years dry up earlier. And loybay lemizben. And therefore the lekeich, knowing that this was the way the deal was structured between the malva and the loiva, should have been concerned that there is a possibility that he's going to lose the field. And therefore, if this happened, the aloch is that we go after the kuchas. Says the Gemara v'Hilchos, the aloch is, ishtatav nechayri, if the field from which the malva expected to be able to collect his loan got ruined, even though the lekeich bought other field with the expectation that they'll never end up coming after him, the loch is tarif mimishabdi, that we go after the mishabadim, and that is something that he should have considered. Agamar is speaking about lochach meish v'chaza lochach meisha. If somebody bought from the husband and then he bought from the wife, mekach batal. So I saw the Sefer Melaya Omer explains that we know that the women were the first to give their jewelry for the donation of the Beis HaMikdash, and then the first the Yaval Nashim Al Nashim, the wives gave their jewelry. So the Melaya Omer says that we just learned in our Gemara Lokach Ben Ish V'Chazav Lokach Ben Isha, that she could say that the only reason she agreed was Nachas Ruach HaSisi L'Bali. Says the Pasuk, says the Melaya Omer, that the women donated first. So the women can't say that the only reason we did what we did was because we wanted to satisfy our husbands, and that's why we saw that they were anxious to donate, and we donated our jewelry alone, because Nachas Ruach HaSisi L'Bali, we did it first. So they can't say that we were just doing it to make our husbands happy because we saw that's what they want. Amar Baya, if somebody said to a woman, "Nechasilach, my property will be given to you as a gift," but he says, the way I want to structure the gift is achrayach l'ploni. When you pass away, it shouldn't be go to your yorshim, it should go to whoever I designated. Vam devenesis, and now she got married, and the halacha, as we know, is that a husband yashins his wife. The halacha is balakeichavi. The halacha is that the husband's considered like somebody who bought that property. And what the Gemara is learning saying is that even though he left over that if this property is going to be by you when you pass away, it doesn't go to your yorshim, it goes to whoever I designated. But if she sells the property, it will remain with the people she sold it to. And says the Gemara, a husband is considered like a lekeach. Vein le achrayach b'mokam bal kulam. Come on, whose opinion does this follow? That if such a declaration was made, that I'm giving you my property, and after you pass away, it should go to someone else. If she sold it, it will remain with the customer. Come on, kaitana. Tanya, if somebody declared, nechosei loch, after you pass away, it should go to this person. And then, and the first one went, and sold those properties. Hasheni, the person who was designated to get the property after she dies, takes it away from the people she sold it to. Miyadal kuchas devrei Rebbe. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Omer, ein l'shen el mashe shai rishon. If she sold it, they won't be able to collect it. Ask the Gemara, mi amar Abaye hachi, did Abaye say that this is acceptable behavior? Ask the Gemara, amar Abaye, eizu rasha orim. Who is considered a rasha, a bad person, and orim? Orim means conniving. Somebody who gives advice to somebody to whom such a declaration was made to sell those assets. And following Rav Shimon Gamliel. So how could we say that's considered that that's inappropriate? So how could we say that that's what Abaye says is acceptable behavior, that if she gets married, the person who was designated to get those assets after she passes away will lose out? Answers the Gemara, Mikama Tenase. The Gemara didn't say that she should get married and by thereby preventing the person who's supposed to get the assets from getting the assets. Nisus Kamar, she is already married, and anything that a wife gets, the Gemara is learning, is the husband's considered lekeach. Vamar Baya, another halacha. If somebody said to a married woman, Nisilach v'achrayach l'poini, or machra, and she sold those assets to somebody else, or mason, and then she passes away, habal moitzi miyad l'kuchas. The husband has a right to say, my wife had no right to say, sell these assets. They belong to me. V'achrayach, and the person who takes those assets, who was designated to get the assets, get a miyad baal. L'keach miyad l'krayach, v'al l'keach, and then the buyer goes and takes it from that achrayach person, and he ends up owning it. Ask the Gemara, why is this not any different from the case that we learned in our Mishnah, where somebody was married to two women, and he sold his field first to one buyer, and the first wife wrote that she gives up her right of collection, that the halacha is that the second wife collects, and then she collects, and then the first wife comes to collect, and we go around and around. Achiyasup shor b'neim, says the Gemara. Hasam, in the case of our Mishnah, islap seidel kula, everybody's a loser, because the two wives want to be able to collect the ksuba, and the person who bought the property wants to be able to hold on to the property he bought. Hoch, in this case, l'keichu islap seidel, the only loser is the person who spent money to buy the property. Everyone else got the property as a gift, and that's why we're most concerned about the lekeich and not anyone else. Ozel Rav from Amal Shmatz Kamed Ravashi, he said over this Gemara to Ravashi, and he said, "Mi Am Abaya Hachi did Abaya say this? For Am Abaya Nisi Loch Vachraich Leploini Am Devenisus Ubal Lekeichava Veilachraich B'Mokem Bal Klum." So the Gemara asked the question that's obvious. We're saying that the husband gets it, and then the achrayich takes it from the husband. But Abaya says that the husband's the lokeach, and he gets it and keeps it. So why does the achrayich have a claim? Amalei, hasan damalei kishapnuya. The case where Abaya said it was he said it when the woman was not married. And he didn't intend to say, he didn't think that she's getting married, that she's going to get married, and that the husband will come along and be considered the first lokeach. In the second statement that Rabbi made, the Amalek Shina saw when she was already married, my Kamala, what he was explicitly saying or implicitly saying was that I'm giving it to you, and yes, under normal circumstances, a husband, as we just learned, is considered a lokeach, but I don't want that halacha to happen. I want a chrayach to happen. And even though we can't make a condition against what it says in the Torah, but if somebody makes a condition in a financial deal, they're allowed to make such conditions. And by saying a chrayach, that's what the Gemara says is what he meant. He meant that your husband shouldn't get it, rather another person should get it. We learned in the Mishnah, the chayim bal chayiv. What is the case of bal chayiv? Says the Gemara, the chayim bal chayiv is shnei lekuchas. The case is that somebody lent money to someone else, and the loiva had two pieces of property that were equal to half of the debt. And the loiva sold those two properties to two different buyers. The malva wrote to the second buyer, I'm not going after you. The halacha is that he could still go after the first buyer for half of the loan. And then the first buyer goes after the second buyer. Now the malva goes back to the first buyer, and he says, I want your half. And the second buyer says, I want to get it back from the malva because you wrote to me, you're not going after me. And that's the case that we go round and around. And then, said the Mishnah, Ken Isha Baalos Chayv Shtei Lekuchas, another case. A wife, who her husband owes her a ksuba of 200 zuz. And he had two fields. Each field was worth a mana. And he sold these two fields to two buyers. And the woman wrote to the second buyer, Din udvar me'eli imach, I won't go after you. And now the husband dies. The wife collects the field that's worth 100 from the first buyer, because to him, she didn't write such a designation. And now the first buyer goes after the second buyer. And now the wife, who did not write anything to the second buyer, goes back to the second buyer and collects the field, didn't write anything to the first buyer, goes after the first buyer for having the field, and she has both fields. But now the second buyer goes back to the wife and says, you wrote that you're not going after the field that I bought. So we again have the round and around, and as we learned in the Mishnah, when you have these types of situations, Yasup Shara Beinayim. Hanu Lach Misha Yenasi, Hanu Lach Misha Yenasi, Hanu Lach Misha Yenasi.